The Lara Murphy Show, episode 56.
Welcome to The Lara Murphy Show, the podcast that analyzes financial markets from the perspective of Austrian economics and Nelson Nash's infinite banking concept. Listen and learn as your hosts, Robert Murphy and Carlos Lara, explain how you can be part of building the 10%.
Attention, Lara Murphy Show listeners. If you want to see Carlos Lara, David Stearns, and myself put on a seminar for the general public, which is based on the material in our new book, The Case for IBC, and you're in the Chicago area, then you're going to want to pay attention. On Saturday, May 19th, 2018, we will be giving such a seminar. For more details, go to ibcseminar.com. Hope to see you there. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of The Lara Murphy Show. Now, this one, I should probably introduce myself. How rude of me. I'm Bob Murphy, and with me, as normal, is Carlos Lara, hailing from Nashville, Tennessee. Carlos, how are things up there?
Well, they're going good, Bob. I'm looking forward to seeing you this weekend in Chicago. It's coming up, you know, and maybe take a little moment to thank the people that have made the effort to come, because I understand we've got a nice crowd that's going to be waiting for us there. So I always like to be able to meet people, you know, in person. And so thank you all that are listening to this particular podcast and have made the effort to come out and see us in Chicago. I'll be looking forward to seeing you.
That's right. So, folks, this good news and bad news is that the bad news is this is your last chance. If you're hearing this podcast as we post it, we think this one will run just before the Chicago seminar on May 19th, 2018. So if you haven't got your tickets yet, this is the last chance. You go to ibcseminar.com for that, all the information about where it's going to be and so forth. The good news is that if you've gotten sick of hearing our bumper ad on this podcast series, and then this will be the last episode you'll hear it for a while until we do another one. So again, if you're in the Chicago area, Saturday, May 19th, 2018, Carlos is going to be there. I'll be there, David Stearns, and we're going to do a whole crash course in Austrian economics. I'll be talking about the economy as well. So in case that pushes you over the edge, it's not going to be just purely the theory of IBC. We'll also be putting it in the context of the present economic situation. All that information is at ibcseminar.com. Now, this episode is significant in another way. Not only are we ending the push for the Chicago seminar, but also, Carlos, we have now reached the final chapter, pun intended, of this series, because we're on the last chapter of our book, The Case for IBC, which we wrote with Nelson Nash. If you don't have the book yet, you go to thecaseforibc.com. And you notice how our URLs are very intuitive. I think that we really just done a favor for the listeners by making the website so easy to remember.
That's actually a good way to do it, Bob. I've heard some comments about that. Yeah.
We originally were thinking of making it gonewiththewind.com. And then we thought, you know what? That's going to confuse people. Why would we do that? So now we're on chapter 7. The title of this is Putting IBC into Action. So let me... This is drawing on material that comes from, as we'll explain where it, you know, the genesis of it was from one of Carlos's ideas, and it's based on a series of articles in the Lara Murphy Report, the LMR, that Carlos wrote originally. And this is the area in the seminar where he takes over. But let me just give the context here. So in the previous, well, two chapters ago, we dealt with some common objections, you know, things like what if the dollar crashes, you know, what if I'm uninsurable, things like that. But now we saved one particular objection for this chapter, because what happens is, and this is not just a hypothetical thing, like we're not just making this up to motivate the point we want to make. This literally, I've seen this with my own eyes when Carlos and I would do presentations. A business owner would come up to Carlos and he would say, you know what? I love this stuff. You know, you guys are great. I'm on board with the Austrian view of stuff. You're right. I don't like what the Fed's been doing, blah, 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 blah. And I totally agree with you that the commercial banks, they got a stranglehold on us. You know what though? I'm a small business owner and I would love to do this kind of stuff. I agree in principle, setting up an alternate bank the way you talked about in your presentation makes it. But you know what, Carlos? I don't have the spare cash. You know, if I were to start plunking away with the money I actually have free and clear at the end of each month to build up one of these things, it would take me a decade before I could wean myself off the commercial bank's line of credit. So, you know, thanks, but no thanks. This really doesn't apply to me, but yeah, I'm sure there's some other business owner out there with, you know, who just got much more solid foundation. And I bet you he can benefit from this information, but unfortunately I can't. God bless. And so what do you say in that situation, Carl? And again, folks, this is not hypothetical. I literally have seen Carlos say this to real world business people. And then all of a sudden, you know, their eyes wide open wide and they realize they haven't been looking at it right.
Well, you know, it's true. This is a very common objection. There's a lot of things working on that, Bob. I mean, for one, clearly, because we're talking about life insurance, I mean, so many people have a mental block toward that. You know, it's hard for them to comprehend or understand that we're actually talking about a cash flow system here, a cash management system as opposed to life insurance. We are using a life insurance policy, you know, to do this with, but it's a hard transition to make mentally. So as you said, Bob, what they envision is their idea of a life insurance policy, you know, taking a long time, you know, to build up cash large enough to be able to deal with some of the cash management concerns that business owners come under. And business owners, as most of us, fail to see is that the cash flow management system that we're all using is the commercial banking system. I mean, that is our primary cash flow management system because we all wind up putting our money into commercial banks. And from there, we deploy that money, you know, to pay our bills and run our businesses. We've all been doing it for so long that we've gotten used to it, and we have no other way of seeing it. Now, as we've done in this particular book, Bob, The Case for IBC, we've begun the discussion, you know, talking about how business owners are able to see this, the benefit of IBC much, much quicker than maybe the average employee. They do see the cash management, and in particular, they see it when they hear me describe the stranglehold that they can come under by just being involved with a commercial bank. And when we walk through that whole scenario like we did in chapter one, by the end of that entire chapter and the explanation that takes place there, all of a sudden there's a real strong motivation to get out from under the grips of the commercial bank like never before because now we're seeing the big picture of all these little things that can happen or that can go wrong. And not only is the business owner seeing it, but of course, households are seeing it too. For people that are in the audience and or reading the book, they can clearly see that even though we start off talking about a business owner, that all of these things apply to the management of a household.
That's a good point. Let me just make sure people get that. Even though we found writing this book in the presentation and the seminar, we sort of take the rhetorical strategy of let's say we're talking to the business owner, let's discuss the condition of a typical small or medium-sized business owner. That doesn't mean if you're just a salaried employee running a household that this has no implications for you. It does. It's just like, as Carl said, we found for some reason when you picture a business owner and then you see how IBC could help that person, it clicks for people for some reason. So that's a good point. I just wanted to emphasize that if you're not a business owner, don't just skip to the next podcast. This is still very relevant to you.
Exactly. And when I speak in terms of you know, having to meet with business owners under the type of work that I've spent so many years doing, which is, you know, solving a financial crisis where, you know, cash and credit, you know, has pretty much dissipated, and the business owner is basically, you know, fighting for his life at this point. As a business consultant dealing with this type of problem, you get very creative as to how to raise cash as quickly as possible. That's one of the first orders of business that you tend to when you're dealing with one of these types of problems is, you know, how do I access cash immediately and get it pumping through this business to keep it afloat? Well, the same kind of thing happens with a household. You know, households get into trouble just as much. I mean, they get overwhelmed with credit card debt. They can, you know, maybe wind up living way beyond their means, you know, and that have just all kinds of expenses going out the door and not enough revenue coming in. So the way it is with financial professionals that are dealing with the general public in terms of financial planning in order to, you know, get their house in order, financial professionals really take great care in studying the art of being able to show people, you know, how to find the money within their own household expenses or revenue, how to find the money in order to save it, accumulate it, you know, and then properly guiding them on how best to spend it going forward. Well, the same thing occurs in this particular chapter here that we're talking about. The last chapter is we're ending the book by coming back to the business owner situation that we discussed in chapter one. And now we're going to help the business owner, in a sense, find the money to be able to fund one of these IBC policies that will work for his particular business situation. You got a business owner here that is very tied to a commercial bank, is utilizing lines of credit, maybe even has some loans outstanding, and he realizes that he somehow needs to break away from the commercial bank, but he realizes to do it with an insurance policy when there's no, from what he can tell, there's no excess cash flow around to fund one of these things with. So he figures, I can only, you know, maybe put $20,000, $30,000 into a policy, and that'll just take forever.
The other misconception too, let me just jump in real fast, is a lot of people believe falsely that, oh, you know, these cash value type life insurance policies I've seen on the internet, and I've heard, you know, just everyone kind of knows that you can be pumping money into those things and you can't even have anything available to borrow out until like 3-4 years into the policy. Like, that's what they're thinking. So that's another element in this misconception as to why this person doesn't even bother considering it. So sorry to jump in there, but I just wanted to make sure people realize there was that misconception also.
Right, right. So what we've done here in this particular last chapter, and what I have actually, you know, proposed to business owners, is by just simply asking them if they pay taxes, you know, tongue in cheek, do you pay taxes? And their response is always something like, do I pay taxes? Oh my gosh. I wish I didn't have to pay the taxes that I have to pay. And I said, well, approximately how much in taxes do you pay? Now, once I get that answer, what I immediately go to is, well, why don't we take that tax payment that you're about to make to the IRS, and let me show you how to use that particular cash flow that you already have earmarked to pay to the IRS and get two uses out of it. And this is when they really stop to listen at that point. What do you mean? I said, well, what I'm mostly suggesting is that, and in this particular example that we use in the book, of course, we're talking about a business owner that's paying $100,000 in taxes here. Now, business owners can pay less than that in taxes in a given year, or they can pay, you know, 10 times more than that, because all businesses vary in size. Even though they refer to them as small businesses, you have to remember that that term, small business, applies to businesses that have less than 500 employees. So some of these small businesses that are called small business are actually pretty large enterprises. So they can have quite a bit of money that they have to pay in taxes over a given year. We're using $100,000 because in this particular example, the business owner says, I generally pay about $100,000 in taxes. And it varies from year to year, but that generally that's about how much it is. And so just simply suggesting to him that he take that cash flow and get two uses out of him. Basically, before he pays it out to the government, you know, first of all, use it to set up a properly designed IBC policy, and then simply turn right around and take out a loan and then pay the tax bill.
That's a big one. When people hear that, they go, what? So again, I literally have, you know, this has happened in real life where the person comes, I got no money, Carl. Sorry, this is a great idea. And he says, well, you pay taxes? Yep. And he goes, well, why don't you flow that through? There's money right there. Before you send it to the IRS, why don't you flow through one of these things? And the person, you know, is befuddled. And so that's the element of the, you know, that's the motivation, I should say, for the particular illustration. If you have the book, what I'm referring to is what we have as table 4 in the book. Yeah, so it's table 4 on page 111 in the book. And so that just spells out the implications of that. Again, the assumption being that this business owner has $100,000 that he pays to the government in taxes, and we just show, you know, how you can use that cash flow to build up the infrastructure of one of these policies. Now, before we elaborate on this, let me just make sure there's no misunderstanding. What we're doing here does not lower your tax liability, right? So there are tax advantages if you talk with somebody from our finder, right? One of the qualified graduates who's gone through our training program, and you go to infinitebanking.org/finder to find such people, you know, and you show them stuff. It is entirely possible that the person could recommend things to you that end up, you know, being advantageous even from a tax perspective. So there are those elements, but on this particular thing, it's just that Carlos was trying to come up with something that this person who feels like I got no money left at the end of each month, what are you talking about? I'm riding on fumes here, that he's saying, well, that's partly because you're paying so much to the IRS. And so is there a way you can do something with that money first before you kiss it goodbye? Right. And so for the typical medium business or small business owner, you know, that's a big number. So that's what's going on here. If there were, you know, you could do it with other things too, other types of expenses. So he just picked tax bill just for something concrete that he knew everybody would say, oh yeah, you know, that's a big number. Whereas if he said, well, do you pay rent? You know, if it's just a one man operation or a guy could be working out of his house or something, he might say no. but Carlos knows every business owner is going to say, oh yeah, do I pay taxes? So that's what this is. Carlos is just looking for this, you know, predictable and big expense that's always going to be there, this flow of money through the business owner's hands. And that's where this particular approach comes from.
Yeah. And I might add too, Bob, is you see that how that immediately shifts the business owner from thinking of this as life insurance and begins to think more about cash flow, just immediately upon that suggestion, which is probably one of the key things we always need to remember coming straight from Nelson Nash. Of course, he's saying, you know, this is not about selling life insurance. You know, it's not about that.
It's about how you think, as he says.
Yeah. And, you know, money's got to flow. You know, all of these principles are there. And we're not forgetting the fact that you always have to play honest banker with yourself. You know, you've got to manage that cash flow properly. But it does introduce to the business owner, it's a way to unlock that mine, that block mine, and have him begin to see that this is actually a possibility, he's asking. You can actually do this. And this is what we're trying to demonstrate here, is get that mind to think and to see the power of IBC, you know, by doing something like this.
So let me also just make sure there's no misunderstanding. So first of all, what's going on? Like, what is the tax strategy, if you will? And by the way, again, Carlos had this originally came out besides the fact that he was literally talking to real business owners, but it then in print first came out when Carlos wrote some Laura Murphy report articles called the IBC tax strategy. There were three of them, right, Carlos?
Yes, there were.
Okay. Yeah. So by the way, subscribers to the Laura Murphy report, I mean, you can go dig these up in the archives. But Carlos had three articles, you know, the IBC tax strategies, parts 1, 2, and 3. But the idea being that you're going to set up a policy with large premium payments, and then so like the 100 grand, for example, that so the particular numbers in this table 4, we got the initial premium payments for the first 10 years are 120,000, but ultimately it's going to drop back down to being $20,000 base premium for a while at least. And so the years of the 120, what happens is there, the business owner is effectively taking the 100,000 that's really earmarked for the IRS and first putting it in through the policy and then taking out a policy loan of 100,000 to pay the tax bill. Okay. So it's just that the money's taking a detour through the policy first. So let me be clear. There's nothing magic going on here. It's not that you're getting money for free. It's not that you're able to simultaneously do two things at once or something. Like there's nothing magic going on here. You do have, you know, this big policy loan that's building up. So the idea though is, and the, you know, the specific scenario we have in the book is that really for a business owner, when you say to us, you don't have any money, what you mean probably is there's no money that I am sure I can bank on, no pun intended, every month or every 6 months or whatever, in terms of being locked in contractually to this big premium for the life insurance policy. And so given what I know I could commit to regularly, I don't want to be on the hook for something that big. And then if I am just on the hook for what I know I can come up with every month, you know what? It's going to take me forever to wean myself off the bank. So what's the point? And so what we're doing here is we're saying, okay, you can build up this infrastructure. You can have this very big and quickly growing death benefit and cash value in gross terms. And yes, in the beginning, if you're just borrowing a lot of it right back to pay the IRS bill, there's this lien against it in the form of the policy loan balance that's, you know, rolling over at interest. But then when you do have extra revenue coming in that's more irregular, like let's say you know you're going to be selling a piece of property, putting it on the market in the next year or 18 months, and when that thing goes through and you have the sale revenue come in, you know, that could be several $100,000 right there or whatever the number may be. The point is that's when you now have this nice infrastructure built up, and then you just use that to pay down the policy loan balance that's been accumulating. Okay, so that's the idea. So you wouldn't, if you just knew, if you didn't think you were ever going to have that come in, you certainly wouldn't set up a policy with the numbers we have here. So that's sort of the idea. It's the point is, it's not that it's magic. It's not that, oh, just put the money in and borrow against it, and then, you know, you have free money. That, of course, that's not what we're saying. We're saying though that in the real world, a lot of business owners over a longer time frame, they do have a lot of quote extra money coming in. It's just when they first come up and say, I don't have any spare money, they mean that, you know, I can be sure is going to be there every month free and clear to go pay this premium. And so we're just pointing out, well, you know, this is one way you can build that infrastructure up quickly. And also with the specific design of the policy, if the person had this misconception that you got to have the stuff sit there and fester for 3 years or germinate for 3 years before you even can borrow against it, that's not correct. what they have in mind there is like a plain vanilla permanent cash value insurance policy. Whereas the way somebody who's been through our program can design these things, the available cash builds up much more rapidly. So there's a lot of moving parts here, but we're just trying to show people the power of IBC. So that's probably, the last 10 minutes or so here of the podcast episode, Carlos. Why don't we transition and mention that it's, let me be crystal clear. If you're reading the case for IBC and you see that table 4, it's not really that we're saying this is what you should go do. What we're saying is, if you're the kind of person who thought, you know what, I'm a business owner and this sounds great, I just don't have any spare money, we want you to look at this thing just to open your eyes and to expand your mind. I don't mean to sound like Kanye West. Sorry, folks. We just want, it's a thought experiment, an exercise for you to see that that's possible. Do you see how you could build up this infrastructure to make room for, the revenue that might come in when you sell a piece of property or something? And then once they see how potent these things are and the possibilities, usually all of a sudden, oh, wait a minute, you know what? Maybe I do have more money than I thought before when I told you 10 minutes ago. So do you want to elaborate on that stuff, Carlos?
Well, yeah, you're making me think of one of Nelson Nash's often used comment when he says the fish are the last to see the water. And this illustration, Bob, is a way of demonstrating that principle. We have aggressively pushed this illustration for a couple of reasons. Number one, it gives us the opportunity in this last chapter to talk about the composition of what we might call a specially designed IBC policy. And the fact that he's using the tax bill and running it or detouring it into the policy first and then taking the money right back out again is like I said, is letting the business owner know something very powerful about these policies, these IBC policies. Because in his mind, he said, my goodness, I'm basically putting the money in and taking it right back out again. And so what sort of money is being left in there to really build up the policy? So he starts to think now. He's thinking. Now, in the illustration itself that we're showing, always keeping in mind that illustrations are projections. They're what ifs. They don't actually become solid contractual until you sign off on the illustration. They become part of your insurance contract. But all life insurance illustrations are projections. Okay, so this is what we're looking at as a projection here. Always keeping in mind that there are windfalls that will come in for this business owner, because this is the way businesses operate. They have windfalls. They can control profits. They buy business assets that they sell. So we know there's windfalls in the background. Now, for households, we see windfalls every now and then because, sometimes individuals that don't run a business will buy real estate and sell real estate and creates a windfall. They may also get an inheritance, and all of a sudden they wind up with all this money and they're able to pay off a lot of bills and a lot of debt. That's a windfall.
So can I jump in real fast, Carl? I don't mean to derail your train of thought, but because I've talked to some people and I think they're a little bit confused by that term. When in the context of a business owner, when we say windfall, we just mean something like an irregular type of revenue that comes in, as opposed to something that's more predictable. It doesn't necessarily, it's not like, oh, your Uncle Jim just died. And so this, it's not like it's completely unrelated to your business, so it's more of that sort of thing. So it would make sense for a business owner to say, oh yeah, I know I'm going to have a quote windfall revenue of 800 grand coming in over the next 3 or 4 years. I just can't tell you exactly when. That's not like they're just saying, hey, maybe something lucky will happen and maybe money will come in because you never know. Fingers crossed. That's not what we're saying.
That's right. That's right. But again, in this particular illustration, we've It's very aggressive. For one, we show that the business owner is taking out, virtually $100,000 in policy loans every year for 10 years. Again, just simply illustrating it that way. Not necessarily that he would actually do that, but illustrating it. And we're also showing the illustration where the business owner is not making any attempt to pay any of it back. Okay, we're letting those policy loans and the accrued interest, we're letting it roll. And so this particular illustration shows that. And so, but if you read the chapter and you see what's going on in that policy, you begin to see the powerful structure that is being set up, even though those policy loans are still rolling over at interest. And this is the thing that we wanted to show people, that the IBC policy structure is very powerful. And as you've said, Bob, it's not that we're literally telling people this is the policy you should have, but if you see the power that's here, you will see that, yes, this is really where all of my money should be warehoused in one of these things. So I should make every attempt to take whatever available excess cash flow that I do have and plow it into this type of policy. And if you read the book and you're seeing it in that way, that's when you begin to see that the business owner would quickly come to that conclusion. And he would say to himself, you know, the next time I sell that piece of property I've had over here on the market, I'm taking the profits from that and I'm dumping it back into this policy. Now, he would be doing it by paying off some of those loans, and obviously the availability of cash value rises by that same amount. And so he sees right away that this is how he can quickly wean himself from the commercial bank, almost right away. So this is some of the things that we see in this last chapter, in this particular illustration that we're showing, in a very aggressive illustration, by the way, I might say, but for purposes to show the power, the immense power of an IBC policy.
Yeah, exactly. And so again, folks, just to make sure you get the book, we wanted it. I mean, it's a real illustration. We didn't make those numbers up. It's a real thing. So don't misunderstand what we're saying. But again, it's not so much that we're saying, hey, this is, go do this. We're just saying, realize this is possible. Because again, the context is we're trying to knock down objections. And so somebody who says, you know, oh, I love this. If I had extra money, I would do it. But you know what? I'm strapped right now. I'm busted. We say, well, wait a minute, look at this. And then usually that's what provokes more thought and conversation. And then what that business owner probably will end up implementing is something that's more conservative because, as Carlos said, the person realizes, wait a minute, you know, I didn't realize how powerful, you know, instead of me plunking this much into the IRA or me doing this or that, you know, maybe I should start, you know, and all of a sudden they start seeing extra money they didn't know they had. Because they weren't taking it seriously because they assumed that these things weren't as flexible as they actually are, and so that's part of what's going on here. Let me also I feel like I need to just run through some of these caveats, Carlos, because again people are listening to this for the guidance on this stuff. So let me just say it to make sure there's no misunderstanding. Yes, these things are powerful. You can take out policy loans, they're very flexible. As we said, part of the advantage here is you can get access and get a source of funding, cash flow on much better terms, much easier terms than if you'd like went to take out a home equity loan or what have you. But that doesn't mean it's free money, right? If you borrow money against your life insurance cash surrender value, you've got this outstanding policy loan that's rolling over in interest. So that's a debt. And there might be situations where it's perfectly reasonable for you to let that thing roll for a while, but don't just forget about it. Make sure you have a plan and that you revisit that periodically and make sure the plan still makes sense. In particular, you almost never would want to surrender one of these policies, especially if you have a really big policy loan balance that's been accumulating. Okay, so there's a lot of technical reasons for me saying that, but I just want to make sure there's no misunderstanding there, that we are certainly not sitting here telling people, oh yeah, go ahead and borrow the money, don't ever pay it back, and you're fine, who cares? That's not what we're saying. We're just showing this particular illustration, the power, and how you can have, quote, room for a windfall, in the sense of, you know, you have this policy loan balance, and then, oh, you get revenue coming in because you sold a piece of property. What do I do with the money? You can just pay down the loan balance, and that's effectively increasing the amount free and clear that's in your, quote, alternative bank. Okay, so that's the idea. We are not saying that, oh yeah, go ahead and borrow money against this thing and don't worry about it because it's free money. That's certainly not what we're saying. Any other things we want to leave the listeners with, besides urging them to go to thecaseforibc.com and get this book now that they've been waiting with bated breath to hear our whole podcast series on it?
Well, no, I think we covered that pretty well. As I said, you know, study that last chapter and you know, read all the little caveats that are in the chapter discussing that particular illustration. Again, we keep emphasizing it's a very aggressive one. We've made it so aggressive that, you know, you can't fail to see the power in it. So you're right. The idea here is to open up that mind and make you see that this is really where all your wealth should be stored. And from there, you deploy it to buy and invest in things. So that's mainly the main point of that particular chapter, Bob. And thank you for those last remarks you made, Bob, because yes, we always want you to be playing honest banker with yourself. Paying back policy loans is very important. But once you see, you know, what this type of system does, you will want to pay those loans back. It just provides you that much more additional cash to work with to take advantage of other opportunities.
Yeah. So I guess we can end like this. Clearly, you know, in case it hasn't been, Carlos and I, we don't sell life insurance to the general public. That's not what our role is. Our role is educational. But you can see these things do get tricky really fast. There's a lot of moving parts. And so if you are intrigued, you want to say, you know, I like these big picture ideas that these guys are talking about, or I read their book, and now I want to say, how do I apply this in my own situation? Ultimately, you're going to need someone to design and implement one of these properly structured whole life insurance policies. And so for that, we obviously point you to the graduates of our program. So that's at infinitebanking.org/finder. Having said all that, though, if you want to just bounce some ideas off of Carlos and or me, we do have a method set up by which you can consult with us. And if that's something you want to do, go to larmurphy.com, and then on the contact tab at the top of the page on the right, there's a contact button, and you can figure out how to do that. So that's Lara Murphy, is LARA-Murphy.com is where you go to figure out how to talk to Carlos and me directly. Well, thanks for your attention, everybody. This wraps up our podcast series on the case for IBC, and we will resume our regular programming in terms of just commenting on the financial news, and there's a lot of that, so we look forward to getting back in the saddle on that next episode. See you next time, folks.
You've just finished another episode of The Lara Murphy Show. Be sure to share this podcast with your friends and colleagues to do your part in building the 10%.
The Lara Murphy Show is provided with the understanding that the staff and contributors of LaraMurphy.com are not herein engaged in rendering legal, accounting, tax, or investment advice. On such matters, please consult your own professional tax, legal, or financial advisor.